Any opposed?
No.
I'm going to rule that motion fails.
Right now on KSL Plus.
Politics is about two things. It's about relationships and results.
1 week after the end of the 2023 legislative session,
one lawmaker made Utah history.
Carol Spackman Moss has served longer than any woman in the legislature. 23
My colleague Deanie Wimmer talks to Representative Carol Spackman Moss.
Have you lost a family member from COVID? I have.
She's served for 23 years.
A state's budget is a statement of its priorities and values,
making her the longest-serving woman in the history of the Utah legislature.
Well, that's correct. I'll be the longest serving woman in the history of the legislature. There are men who've served longer. I think Haven Barlow, it was in the 40s, the years that he served. But for a woman, that is the longest. And it just happened. I never set out to set any kind of records. It just all of a sudden they said, oh, by the way.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So you didn't see this milestone barreling down. It was a surprise.
No, last spring the chief clerk said, are you running for office again? And I said, yes, I am. And she says, do you know that you will, if you get elected after January 1st, you'll be the longest serving. The previous one was a Democrat, Bev White from Tooele, and she served 22 years. So, yeah, I had no idea.
What do you think of that?
Well, it surprises me, but I had a career teaching, a wonderful career before, and this just seemed like a way to sort of extend the work I was doing as an advocate for public education for teachers and to continue serving my community, but in a different way.
Do we not care about their health and safety?
And so it's not full-time. I spend a lot of time at it, but I still had plenty of time. My husband and I traveled a lot. I could do a lot of other things, and I didn't have to grade papers. That was the only downside of teaching English. I love teaching literature and writing, but oh, those papers, stacks of papers, nights, weekends.
So bills are better than papers?
Right. You just have to read them. You don't have to write about them. I always say, two hands on the wheel, both eyes on the road.
Representative Carol Moss has made it her mission to save lives. For more than 4 years now, she has pushed for tougher restrictions on phone use behind the wheel. It is still legal in Utah to hold your phone and chat while driving. Moss has tried to change that several times, in fact, including last year and the year before.
This is a crisis, and we really need to address it with reasonable laws.
I don't know if you have memories coming here 23 years ago. What's something that sticks out in your mind?
Well, I thought it would be easier to get things done, you know, that I would just propose something that would happen. I didn't realize how much behind the scenes really work it takes and the stakeholders that you have to reach out to. I just thought you put forth a good idea and people would vote for it if it was a good idea. But, you know, I am in the minority, so you have to really work hard. Harder, I'd say, than if you're in the majority. But I learned quickly that you have to reach out and get advocates and work it. That's the whole thing. And I've learned how to do that much better. I start earlier. Often now we do working groups on a particular topic. You get a group together. And now with the wonders of Zoom, you don't have to come up to the Capitol all the time. You can just get a group together and do a Zoom meeting and talk about things like I did with my suicide prevention bill. I met with the county sheriffs twice via Zoom. They're all over the state. We talked about their priorities, what would be most helpful in helping prevent suicides, because we do have a very high rate in national ranking per capita of suicide. So I know a lot more what goes into making good legislation.
Seeing all those present who voted, voting is closed. H.R. 901 passes the House with 56 yes votes and zero no votes.
The resolution to encourage the Utah Board of Education to prohibit teaching critical race theory passed the House and ultimately the Senate. But the big focus was House Democrats who walked out, taking a strong stand that this resolution is inappropriate.
My biggest concern with this resolution is about the flawed process.
Carol Spackman Moss was among the Democrats to walk out.
See, there's a process, and we should follow that, and it's worked well for decades, and not let extreme politics invade our public schools.
What's changed over the 23 sessions?
What's changed is that we don't have a lot more women. I came in with a lot of women, and women of great distinction like Pat Jones and Karen Morgan, Karen Hale, Marie Polson, Becky Edwards, and it was just thrilling to have these women, and we were very collaborative. We worked across the aisle, and I've seen over time, especially this session, that it's much more partisan, like hyper-partisan.
We need to look at two sides to fairness. And in this case, what has not happened and what this bill will do will marginalize kids who are already feel marginalized.
This is an incredibly contentious and divisive issue. I understand that. I think, though, at this point, we are doing our best to try and thread a needle to be able to preserve women's sports and find a path forward.
It's political theater because it won't go into effect. So we won't get any of the benefits from passing this bill, but we will get absolutely all of the harms.
I came in with 22 Democrats, and now we have 14. And so clearly it's harder. It's harder to be in the minority. You have to work harder.
So those inroads haven't really...
No, and our caucus, as Democrats, we've always had more women than all of the majority caucus. So I feel like, I don't know why exactly, but women that run for office tend to be more of them Democrats.
We've interviewed you for a lot of stories and done stories on many of your efforts. We've talked to you about many of your efforts. What are you most proud of? What accomplishment are you most proud of?
I think the work I've done in the opioid overdose epidemic. Starting in 2014, I passed the first naloxone rescue bill.
We're fed up with the status quo.
And that was at a time when you could only prescribe it to a patient. Well, a patient can't help themselves, and so that just made it so a doctor could prescribe it to another person. But then not enough doctors knew that, so the next step was make it so all the police officers could carry it without liability. And then it was all the health departments could hand it out to a family member or a friend. And now we've gotten to the point where you can get it without a prescription. And you can even get a naloxone kit at your public library. And then I did two Good Samaritan laws, and that means that when someone, instead of letting their friend die or abandon them when they're overdosing, and that happened to several of my former students whose parents came and told me, then if you call for help, then you don't have to, you won't be charged with use or possession. Instead of abandoning your friend or dumping him out in a sidewalk in front of a hospital. So then I joined forces with Jennifer Plum, who's now a senator, Dr. Plum, and her brother started Utah Naloxone because that happened to their brother. And now I feel like that's saved thousands of lives, the ability they've distributed all over the state now.
It's not clear at all what the outcome's going to be. As we often say in legislating, it's the unintended consequences that we're concerned about.
How's your first career in education influenced your time as a lawmaker?
That's a good question. I've been asked that a lot, and I often say, what prepared you to be in politics? And I said, spending 33 years in classrooms with teenagers. And while it gets a laugh, it's really true, because the skills I learned, it's about communication. Politics is about two things. It's about relationships and results. And the ability to communicate with people of all different types of personalities and to get along with stakeholders like parents and administrators. I mean, I've had so much opportunity to explain things and educate and work with different people with different styles of communication. And I think that's been a huge part of whatever success that I've had.
But it's not far wrong to say that if you can get along with teenagers, you can get along with anyone.
Correct, because some people say, some of those legislators, maybe.
I hear it. Over all those years of service, collectively, what are you most proud of?
I have been a strong advocate for education and for teachers, and I've passed legislation that has benefited education. I've certainly been part of getting funding for education because I've served on the Appropriations Committee.
If Utah truly values our children, then dramatically increasing funding for public education is the way to show it.
I also passed the first bullying and hazing bill way back in the early 2000s, and now when kids are bullied, there is a process of filling out a report, not being able to retaliate against people, and I'm really proud of that because, you know, we continue to see a lot of bullying, but I'd say that because teachers all over the state, look, count on me to be a voice for them, and this session especially, there have been a lot of bills that have been really either attacking teachers or public schools or banning books, and I've been outspoken opponent of those bills, and so I'm proud of that because they appreciate it. Teachers write to me and say thank you.
Along those lines, on the one hand you hear this has been the session of education because of the overall money, but then you mentioned those fights about removing the earmark and the other voucher bill tied to teacher raises. Do those wear on you?
They really do, and they wear on teachers. They're happy for the salary increase, but then you say, but we're going to give $42 million to encourage people to take their kids out of public education. And so you can't say on the one hand, we love teachers, but we're going to encourage people to leave public education. And then the bills about transparency, as if teachers, what they do is secret. Just show up if you want to know what you're teaching or how your kid's doing or what the curriculum materials are. Go to parent-teacher conferences, email. Teachers already reveal that. And so it seems very punitive. And many of these bills, I have to tell you, they come verbatim from other states. And they make assumptions that teachers are teaching things like critical race theory and other things, which they're not. And so that distrust has really worn on teachers. And I know teachers who are leaving the profession as a result. They just said, and it started with the pandemic and the mask wearing and closing schools and, you know, and certain segments of the population were angry about that. But when school board members have to be escorted to their car, this happened in Granite District by the police, and other board members in other counties have had death threats. That's a problem. And that really does weigh on people in public education. And people like those who run for school boards. So it's been really troubling to me. And so this would provide data that we could really compile and see what are the biggest issues and how can we address them. You really can't make good policy if you don't have good data.
Of all the bills that you've introduced and worked on, and I know you've worked on many across the aisle with people, what's been the one you wish you could have gotten through that didn't?
Well, it's one that I ran again this term and it didn't get through, or this session. It had an innocuous title like Health Education Amendments, but it was really about in the health classes in junior high and high school that kids be taught about ways to prevent sexual violence and assault, because it is a huge problem in Utah. Our statistics show that 1 in 3 girls is a victim of some kind of sexual violence by the time they're 18, and the rate of rape is very high, and boys too. And to teach kids about grooming and coercion, and to teach them also the illegality of sending sexually explicit images over with their phones is called sexting. It's happening in every high school, And it's a federal offense. So that, but it was shut down by a group of parents primarily called Utah Parents United, and they say it should be taught in the home, but you have to opt in. You don't have to have your kid, but it's not, or we wouldn't have the rates we do. So that's very disappointing to me. It would protect kids. Knowledge is power, and educating them is to give them that kind of power, requiring consent, as well as teaching them refusal skills. And those are important things. I mean, we, as I say, the data is there. They need that kind of education. And the majority of kids are in public school, so that's where you reach most kids. But sadly, parents don't always teach these things. I would say I wasn't good at it. You know, we have to learn the language, and kids need to learn the words and the language to use. We seem to have crossover appeal because we couldn't be reelected without Republican support.
What would you say to women who are thinking about going into office, or young women who want to be like you?
Well, I'd say you should really consider running for office. And my good friend Pat Jones, formerly a senator and a rep, runs the Women's Leadership Institute. Many women have gone through that to teach them about the kind of leadership skills. Women are very good in legislation. They're more collaborative, I think, than men. Men want to win at all costs. Women want to bring people together. And they do slightly different kinds of legislation, more on families and more in the social services area, I would say. But I've done all kinds of things. I've done HOA, homeowner association bills. I've done a variety of things, and I've been working with the county jails, and I've worked on insanity defense. Things come to you. That's what makes it fascinating. Things happen, or constituents come to you and with ideas. But I think women are very good because they have the kind of empathy that comes from raising families, and I, like I say, a more collaborative demeanor, I'd say, in working, where men are kind of in it to win it, more competitive. Not that I'm not competitive. I think women are too, but in a different way. Well, I think that women have a tendency to do work on issues that relate to everybody. It takes money. You have to be, when people say, oh, I just don't like to ask people for money. Well, first thing someone said to me when I said that, when I was first running, he said, you're not asking people to give you money. You're asking people to donate money to your campaign because of the values and issues that you are supporting. So that changed the whole dynamics. I'm really very good at that now.
That's
fundraising.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It comes down to this. Put your phone down. Two hands on the wheel. It would be only a slight inconvenience in my view, and it could make all the difference.
Well, I'm really proud of the fact that beyond just doing legislation during the session, that I do a lot of constituent services work, and I don't have a staff in the off session. But my neighbor calls me a connector because I know a lot of people. So when someone calls and says, like refugees, for example, that couldn't get driver's license, I can call the head of the DMV with his cell phone. I can get to the head of an agency because I have a title, and I don't use it to impress anybody. It's that I can get through to someone where the public generally has to go through up the bureaucratic ladder and often get stuck down there. So I can make those connections for people, and I think I feel better about that. People that I knock on their doors year after year, and they say, oh, we'll never forget when you helped us do such and such. And that means more to me, really, than passing a lot of laws.
Well, and you're known for working out in your district with your people. They know you. You meet with them.
Right. I go to schools. I go to fairs. I go to parades. And you know, I show up at things. And I go to community council meetings. And I think that's been the biggest joy because I like people, and I like to be part of things that might change things for the better, and it's just given me an opportunity in a different way.
That does it for us this week on KSL Plus. I'm Matt Rascone. I'll see you again next week.